Guitar people, welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine. With your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with Dwayne Smith, singer and guitarist with the Chevelles. In our conversation, Dwayne tells us a little bit about his hometown of Perth, Australia, and the Chevelles' new single, Caveman, and his alter ego surf band, the Stingrays. Dwayne talks about his gear for both bands and tells us about his home studio where he records both bands. Dwayne walks us through the history and the lineups of the Chevelles throughout the years and talks a little bit about his side job as a psychiatrist, and he talks about his childhood and being named after guitarist Dwayne Eddy. Dwayne describes how bootlegs of their early albums kickstarted their career in both Spain and Brazil, and how that eventually led to them catching the attention of Little Steven and being signed by his label, Wicked Cool Records, and eventually writing songs with Little Steven. Finally, Dwayne discusses his other side projects, surfing, building custom motorcycles, and a clothing label, 66motorcycles.com, and talks about his home in Bali. To find out more about Dwayne, you can go to the Chevelles website, thechevelles.com. That's thechevelles.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my friend Dwayne.
Hey there, Dwayne.
Hey, Jimmy, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks, man. We finally got the times right. It's a long way. I think I'm 15 hours ahead.
Yeah, so well, you are light years ahead as far as I'm concerned.
It's a strange place, Perth. Most isolated capital city in the world, so we tend to be in the future a little bit.
Yeah.
So, well, good, mate. Hey, thanks for doing the interview. I'm stoked to have a chat to you, actually.
Oh, well, great. Good. I'm stoked as well. I heard the Caveman song.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And then I went on your webpage, and I listened to a bunch of other songs, and I thought, geez, these are just as good, if not better.
Oh, cheers, mate. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I can't tell you how much I enjoy your music.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, look, it's a pleasure, and I'm aware of the Deadlies as well.
No,
so we've actually got a it's great stuff. We've got an alter ego surf band.
Oh, right on.
For the last 25 years, called the Stingrays.
Oh, okay.
And so we play a lot of originals and sort of covers, Dick Dale sort of, orientated sort of Cal surf rock stuff too, you know, from throughout the ages. But a lot of sort of, everything from Jan and Dean. We even do garage sort of surf covers of Beach Boys songs. And
okay.
It's our big party band, basically. So we play sometimes more in a year with that band than we do with the Chevelles these days.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
what do you use when you're playing in that band? What are you using?
As far as guitars-wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a nice purple DeVille that I use, Hot Rod DeVille, and okay. Which is actually from Nashville. It is a DeVille. I'm just trying to think. DeVille, a Fender DeVille with it's a purple vinyl. It used to, I can't remember the guy's name, but it used to be a session player for Dolly Parton.
Oh, wow.
And I picked it up, and a mate of mine picked it up and brought that back. Great guitar. Uh-huh. Great amp, really, really, really loud, though. It's got two Celestian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 212s in it. And it's really, really, really loud.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
But it's got beautiful tones, and I've got Fender Stratocaster that I play with it. So,
yeah,
which is actually my son's guitar that I bought him to try and get him into guitar years and years ago.
Uh-huh.
But he doesn't play much anymore. So I commandeered it, and all my telly too. I've got quite a few tellies and
do you really?
Yeah, quite a few guitars. Yeah.
So in the videos, you're playing the Deluxes. The Gibson Les Paul Deluxe.
I'm playing I'm trying to think which video you watch. The Caveman one. I'm just editing the video, but I play a Epiphone Riviera in that.
Okay.
Yeah, and in the other couple of the other videos, I'd have a I've got a Les Paul, the ones that it's called The Paul.
Okay.
It only came out for a short, you know, short period of time before. It's not a studio. It's actually a, it's sort of like a thinner sort of body, almost like Les Paul Junior sort of style.
Okay.
But I love that. It's really hot pickups and I've got that, and I've got a Firebird as
Yeah, that, I saw the Firebird too. I love Firebirds.
Yeah, they're great. Again, I keep breaking the tuning keys off it because of how they never stand right, so you just go really quickly to go lead them, and they're bang on the ground all the time.
So, are you doing all the production work for the videos?
Yeah, I do the whole lot. I'll give you a quick little. This is my this is my studio here.
Right.
So we sort of set up. It's actually in my garage. So kits and amps and everything, sort of, you know, boxes and my old Marshalls and the whole lot, and a cacophony of old guitars and shit everywhere, really.
Yeah.
I love it. So this is where we record, produce, record, and do everything, really, which is really handy because it's in our house, so we don't have to I don't have to travel.
Yeah.
But there's everything set up. So, yeah. So, well, yeah, this is where we do everything.
And how many guys you got in the band these days?
Four of us. We've got our old drummer, Dave Shaw, used to play in the Stems. I'm not sure if you're aware of the Stems. They're sort of 60s band that did pretty well from over here. He joined us, and he was our drummer for about 7, 8 years, 8 years, I think. And then he had to move over to, went on a surf and safari over in the East Coast, and got married and didn't come back, and then got divorced and then came back. So he's back in the band now too. So he's been our long-term drummer. Jeff Halley, who's started the band with, has been since the start, and Adrian Allen's the other guitarist and songwriter, and he's been in the band probably 2 years after the inception, so about 91. The original guitarist was Richard Lane from the Stems that we formed the band with, and unfortunately he's passed away. So we're pretty stable lineup, relatively, quite a few drummers. But a bit Spinal Tap with the drummers, had about 12 of them.
What is it with drummers?
What is it, man? What is it with drummers?
They're either super stable and they're the businessmen of the band, or they're insane.
I totally agree. It's that, I think it's that packing up the kit at the end of the gig vibe when everyone else is out there having a beer and they're already off stage and they're out there having to lug their bloody gear around. I think after a while they just it comes into their thing. You got to have a certain personality to be a drummer. I'm a psych. My other gig is I'm a psychologist. So
really?
I'm a psych practice. Yeah. So I've been doing interesting personality experiments on all our drummers over the years.
That's great. So when you say the East Coast is would be the Gold Coast?
Yeah, Sydney, Melbourne, Gold Coast, yeah. So that's the East Coast. So 5 hours flight from Perth, so it's a long way. It's like the States, really, sort of having to get from one side to the other.
Yeah. Is it possible to drive from one side to the other?
Yeah, I've done it a couple of times. It takes you a while. It's probably I think it's close on about 7,000 kilometres. So, you can get there. A big, long, straight road right in the middle of Australia called the Nullarbor.
Wow.
Which basically you can go to sleep for about 40 minutes and wake up with your car and still be on the same side of the road.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of nothingness out there, which is the indigenous people over here. It's the Never Never Land, right? So it's just never ever forever land. It goes on and on and on, and beautiful the skies are just incredible at night. It's great to camp on the side of the road, and you've just got this, the stars are just, no light pollution, so it's absolutely incredible here.
Is there much crime on the road?
No, there's not many cars on the road, mate.
Okay.
You can, I mean, even in Western Australia, so our side of it, I've driven all the way up to the top end a few times as well. And I think one day I was going through a road through the middle of Western Australia, sort of going through sheep stations, basically, and open gates and then drive. And I think there was one patch there. We didn't see another car for 7 hours.
Wow.
So yeah, so not a lot, but talking about crime though, there's been a few quite famous sort of serial killers that have preyed on those roads up there. I don't know if you've seen an Australian movie called Wolf Creek.
No, I haven't.
Don't see it. It's the most scariest bloody thing you've ever seen in your life. But about there's a few dodgy, nefarious people. Whenever you get into the outback, as you probably have over in the States as well. Yeah.
Well, we have these places called cities.
not a lot of crime up there.
Yeah, and off the coast of Perth. Just sorry about the geography lesson, but off the coast of Perth, what comes next?
Well, we've got a little island called Rotnest, which is Dutch for rat's nest, because we have these little things called quokkas, which are like. So if you can imagine like a small little kangaroo possum sort of thing that are very unique and only sort of live there. Uh-huh. Then it's Africa, mate.
Okay. Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah. So then that's a big, that's the Indian Ocean all the way over to Africa.
Okay. Okay.
Not a lot.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and if you turn left, or if you look left and went down that way, about 3 hours, 3-4 hours is the bottom of WA, and then there's Antarctica.
Okay. Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. When you were coming up, when you were growing up, did you grow up in Perth?
I actually was born in Queensland, which is, you know, over where the, you know, Surfers Paradise sort of side of Australia, in a small country town. And then moved over here when I was about 10, but we went straight up into the desert because Dad used to work on the mine. So I had a really sort of, it was just a, you know, magical sort of childhood where I was living in this town. It was a gold mine called Telfer up on the tip of the Great Sandy Desert, and we all had mini bikes and motorbikes and schools between 7 a.m. and 12 o'clock because it got too hot in the afternoon. I'm not sure what it is in Fahrenheit, but it was, you know, to get up to about 45 degrees.
Sure.
Pretty easy. So just so much freedom. You couldn't get lost out there. So we, you know, as kids, as 10-year-olds, we were on mini bikes, just, you know, kilometres and kilometres away from town, just out in the sand dunes, just blowing shit up in campfires and doing things that kids do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, grew up there and then came down to Perth when I was about 13, was in boarding school for a while because there's no schools up there. It's one teacher school with 10 kids, basically. So, we moved down. I didn't really like boarding school that much. No. I don't think many kids do.
Yeah. Were you exposed to music much?
Yeah, I was. You know, Mum and Dad, Dad's a big, and Mum, love their country music. So, sure. A lot of country music, which I didn't like when I was a kid because you always rebel against what your parents are listening to. But I found a massive appreciation to the country music and the classics, probably only, you know, in the last 10 years, if I'm really honest. Uh-huh. Look, Australia up there, all we had was one radio station.
Wow.
So, and it was an ABC national radio station. So all it did play was country music. So we're talking back in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
So that was my exposure to music, right? It was really quite limited. And then I came down to Perth and pretty much discovered AC/DC and, you know, and everything else that all the other kids were listening to.
Yeah.
But Mum and Dad were big. I'm named after Dwayne Eddy. My mum was a big Dwayne Eddy fan. So that's where I sort of came from. Awesome, man. Yeah, so that I got the same sort of spelling, but so yeah, into the crooners and the 50s and the 60s sort of music, so I was exposed to a lot of it, but not off the radio, from record players, you know, and cassette tapes. We used to drive a lot up there because to get out of, you know, Telfer and go on a family holiday would be you do a day trip where you drive for 4 or 5 hours and then you'd be there for 2 hours for lunch at some little water hole in the middle of bloody nowhere and one cassette deck that Dad would throw a country music tape in, you know, it'd be Glen Campbell, you know, and it'd just go over and over and over and over.
Oh,
and
my
over
God.
And the kids, you know, and then you'd have to pull it out because the tape would get mixed up and get your fingers. And I remember as kids, like, winding the tape back in when it was caught on the head.
Yes.
And then, you know, doing that in the back seat. And then Dad would put it back in there again. And he only had about, there's probably 10 tapes. And Johnny Cash and, you know, what else? Yeah, Johnny Cash, Glenn Campbell. Look, John Denver.
Sure.
I remember. Yeah, a lot of American country sort of music and Australian country music too. A guy called Slim Dusty.
Okay.
A lot of Australian sort of country music as well.
Yeah. Did you have an opportunity to see music? I mean, like, did major acts go through Perth?
Not really, because we're the most isolated city. It was not a lot of acts. But when my first show I ever went to when I was actually over in Queensland when I was about 10 years old was a 70s rock band called the Ted Mulery Gang. And I remember walking into a small town hall out in the country when I was 10 and just seeing these long-haired dudes just, you know, ripping it up. I remember it really quick. And lots of teenage girls, and because I was only 10, and all these teenage girls were right into it. And I remember thinking, there's some magic in that.
Sure.
So that was the first band I sort of saw, rock band, and then first band ever. And then when I came back over to Perth, there was a lot of international touring bands, and I think that's probably why we're quite sort of isolated over here. So you sort of develop your own music sense, style, and there was lots and lots of gigs. A lot of live music here, bands on every corner. Hotel would play, massive live scene. I think my first band after that I probably saw of any note was probably some local bands when I was probably 13, 14.
Okay.
And that's when that sort of twin revivalist peaks of post sort of punk and psychedelia was starting to happen in the in the early 80s, and so they were you know, mock tops, and it was quite bizarre, really. Tight black jeans and pointy winkle picker boots and paisley shirts, and so that sort of jangle pop stuff is what I sort of was first sort of exposed to, and some punk, some good punk coming to Australia as well around that time. Radio Birdman. Are you aware of those? Radio Birdman, yeah. The Saints.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that sort of, the Saints, who else would have been around that sort of time? There's bands like the Triffids, which weren't a punk band but did pretty well. A lot of local stuff because not a lot of the East Coast bands would come over.
Uh-huh.
Those sort of bands. Yeah, the Saints, Radio Birdman were probably really big sort of influence on me when I was sort of growing up. And because we all surf too, you know, anything that was associated with surfing. So, you know, when the Hoodoo Gurus, Stone Age Romeos came out, that was a massive album for all of us. You know, it was our soundtrack to our beach days, really, you know, this, a lot of that stuff. So, yeah.
How is the surf in Perth?
It's pretty crap in Perth. The island has some good waves, but we've got Margaret River, which is on the world surfing WSL sort of tour, happens every year over here, and that's massive. Big cold water swells from Antarctica, so it'd be like probably you guys sort of Hawaii.
Yeah.
There's some really big swells going down. So that's basically where we used to surf when we were growing up. Cold waters, lots of sharks, mate.
Yeah.
A lot of sharks over here. Big sharks, a lot of great whites. So there's attacks every year here down on the coast, which is unfortunate. But, you know, we are in their playground. we're only 3.5 hours from Bali. So most of my surfing has been through Indonesia. So around Bali, Lombongan, Lombok, Flores, Sumbawa.
Okay.
So I travel a lot over there on surf trips and safaris and stuff like that. So we still all surf.
Yeah, right.
With our old knees.
When you're coming up, what'd you have for gear?
Look, pretty crap gear. I remember when I first started. There was a local music store around the corner from us, and he was my first amp. Believe it or not, right? Was he was a Fender High Watt. Old high watt head,
uh-huh.
And the guy didn't have a speaker cabinet, so he sold me a fallback wedge.
Wow!
So So that's what I sort of started, learning to sort of play with, right? So pretty crap stuff. I bought a Suzuki 335 Gibson copy, because that's all I could afford. But then I sort of started getting into sort of older sort of Fender gear and Marshall gear and things like that. But my first decent guitar I've still actually got, which is a 1970 Sunburst Tele Fender Telecaster custom with a Bigsby bridge.
Okay.
So I bought that for $700.
Wow.
And the money I got to buy that, my mum had her engagement ring. She likes to tell the story that she launched my music career because she hated her engagement ring because it had a sapphire on it that she thought was bad luck. So she hocked it.
Oh my God!
And gave me the cash and said, "Go and buy yourself a good guitar." So that's a great little story.
Oh yeah, that's amazing. Was there music teachers, or did you have to teach yourself play guitar, or how?
There was music teachers. I had a couple of blues lessons from a guy called Mark Vine. There's some great blues players over here in Perth. I don't know if you know where Dave Hole, but Lucky Ocean's the slide guitar player who's a Grammy Award winner, is in the scene over here. It's such a small scene that everyone knows and plays with each other in different bands as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a couple of blues lessons. And then we got together with my mates probably at about 17. And my dad, the bass player at the time, used to, the only rehearsal space we had was, his dad used to own a pet food company. And over here, pet food, because we've got absolutely millions, literally, of kangaroos, it was a kangaroo pet food company. So we actually used to, Jimmy, rehearse in the abattoir with carcasses everywhere. Yeah, and the stench in summer was just horrific.
Oh, no.
But we could leave our gear there. It was the only space, and it was out in a bit of an industrial area. So every Tuesday night we'd go there, and I remember we used to say, look, before we play anyone else's songs, let's see if we can write six of our own. And that's what we sort of kept to. And yeah, every Tuesday night for a good year we rehearsed until we got a sort of set together, and we started playing a couple of covers as well, as you do. And, by the time we were sort of probably 19, we were gigging. So just after school.
Did this become the Chevelles, or?
Well, it started off as a band called the Freuds.
Okay.
But just as that sort of started, I got diagnosed with cancer. So I had Hodgkin's lymphoma. So I had a good sort of 6 to 12 months off playing.
Oh my God.
While I went through treatment. And then I came out of that. I actually had cancer again at 42. On my
whole life. No. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but no, look, all good, mate. It wouldn't wish it upon your worst enemy. But that journey has been a really great thing as far as sort of personal growth for me and my family and stuff like that. But yeah, the Freuds started. The first band was called the Freuds, obviously after Sigmund Freud.
Yeah.
And we were quite a lightweight power, not even really a power pop band, Paisley sort of pop band.
Okay.
And then the Chevelles sort of started up pretty much around sort of 1988. We started sort of jamming. From one band to the other, really.
Okay.
And then the Chevelles has been ever since 1989.
Right on. And at what point did you, did you guys self-produce your records, or did you get on a record company?
Yeah, well, as you can appreciate, we it was the old days, right? So we, everything was so isolated over here. We had a local guy that wanted to put the first EP out that we actually did. So we shopped it around. But we ended up deciding on going with the local guy who had some great experiences and contacts over in Spain. What happened is that we put this album out, and it got eventually got bootlegged in Spain.
Wow.
And that's basically which kick-started our career. So then from that we got a got a Spanish label, another, we have been on lots of different labels early on, but yeah, but interesting story. We were playing over in Sydney at this gig called The Rock Against Work, which was basically for musicians who were unemployed. So it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was quite a famous old pub. We used to tour over the East Coast a bit. It was a bit of a journey, but we'd get over there probably 3 or 4 times a year.
Uh-huh.
And these two Spanish guys come up, Adolfo and Juan Carlos, and said, "You are very famous in our town."
Wow.
And, you know, so what do you mean? We thought we knew our record went over there, but we didn't know what had gone on. We didn't know it was bootlegged. And,
yeah.
And he said, "Would you like to come and play at our annual Mardi Gras? It's the, you know, the big town's party in Inca, in Mallorca."
Uh-huh.
And we said, "Sure, mate, but it's going to cost a bit to get over there."
Yeah.
And he goes, "No, we can get the money to get you there." Anyway, through sort of pigeon Spanish and pigeon English over the and fax machine over the next sort of 3 weeks, they wired $10,000 into
wow.
our account, and which got us enough to do airfares.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went over there, and we're absolutely blown away. I mean, there was 1,000 people in the town square.
Wow.
Met the mayor. And thought, well, what's going on here? This is a bit crazy. And yeah, I'd realized that, you know, they'd probably bootlegged about 20,000 copies through Europe. And not these guys, but, you know, and
yeah.
But look, you know, that's how things used to happen. And from that, it kicked off a 40 date tour over 42 days. So a lot of gigging all around 20,000 Ks in a sleeper bus around Europe.
Wow.
With the Screaming Tribesmen and Scream Feeder, a couple of Australian bands, which was our really first on the road heavy sort of experience.
Yeah, yeah, that's so great.
Yeah, really cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
I think that if we didn't get sort of overseas success, it'd be funny to see what the trajectory of the band is. We're all mates anyway. We'd probably still be playing, but uh-huh. It's been our overseas sort of networks there, and also Brazil, and obviously with Little Steven in the
yeah.
in the States, and Wicked Cool that's sustained us in different markets around the world, which has been awesome.
Sure. And how's your presence in Europe right now?
Well, we're about to head off in December, the 3rd. We've got 10 shows. We're playing the Purple Weekend, which is a 60s revivalist festival up in
okay.
Lyon and Spain, and another festival in Bilbao. And we're doing 10 club shows. But our profile is probably bigger than it's ever been over there now. We tend to sell out, yeah, not huge clubs. We're talking sort of 500
yeah.
to 1,000 seaters over there. But
that's great.
You know, so yeah, but it's really good. The Spanish have been probably the biggest and loyalist, longest sort of fan base that we've had, and Brazil's the same.
Uh-huh.
And we've got little pockets of stuff over happening in the US, which is really good. And
yeah,
yeah. So pretty blessed, really.
Sure,
we continue
sure.
to play.
How's you know? How's Northern Europe? Does Northern Europe take to you much?
More the Latin countries, right? Which
okay.
is really quite interesting. Probably the surf sort of feel, the harmonies, the
yeah.
you know, the they tend to sort of dig that stuff more. But we have played up in Scandinavian sort of countries and
mm-hmm.
Germany and been to the to London as well, and played the UK. But most of our touring, when we've been overseas, probably 16 times, has been through Spain and Brazil.
Okay.
Probably 3 or 4 trips to the US as well.
Okay. And what do you do for gear when you're going to when you go to Spain?
Well, we take all our guitars and we just hire, put the whole lot. It's old school touring, you know. As you
yeah.
know, we just basically get a big van and load the gear in the back, and just the four of us jump in there and
uh-huh.
laugh our heads off for 2 weeks, basically, and play rock and roll, which is
sure.
which is really really great. So the gear over there, we tour with Vox AC30s. No one likes me in the Chevelles because I demand a 1960A angled quad box and a 100 watt JCM 900 dual reverb.
Wow.
So they don't like lugging that in and out of the car, I'll tell you that
Man.
Much. But this time around, I think I might move down to sort of maybe a Vox or a Fender Hot Rod or DeVille or something like that, I think, because I. yeah, they're getting really heavy, Marshall.
Wait, what do the sound guys say when you show up with a
with the hat? Oh, look, the Spanish love their rock and roll, and they love it loud. So
okay, good.
But you know, it's been my sort of go-to amp in the Chevelles anyway for for quite a while. So you know what it's like when you like your gear and you get your gear, you tend to hang on it, eh?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. How'd you catch the eye of Little Steven, or the ear of Little Steven, I should say?
Yeah, look, I think that during that time, Steven was, you know, they were looking around at sort of, you know, bands from around the world, basically, and because he was doing that sort of Wicked Cool, Cool Song of the World compilations and bits like that. And a guy called John Luongo was working at the label at the time, and so we had a meeting with John, and, you know, and we were sort of in between labels at that time too. We were just... finished an album that was looking like it was going to come out on Zip Records with another guy who's become a really good mate, Art Herman from Zip Records, who's over in Europe. And the deal was at the time that they wanted to do the whole back catalogue, take all the records and all the publishing that'd be our new home. And we jumped at the chance because, you know, Steven's fantastic. And
of course. Were you aware of him? I mean,
Through not so much through Bruce Springsteen's sort of band and the E Street Band, but more so through Sopranos.
Okay.
I was aware that he, you know, was a great guitarist and was a really good guy too. I had a period there, not for a little while now, but I wrote a song called Betty Page with Steven, which was a really cool experience where I'd send an MP3 over of what I'm working on, and they'd transfer it to a cassette, and Steven would listen to it on a cassette, and then he'd record on a little voice recorder going, hey, Duane, you know, maybe, you know, think about this on the bridge. And then they'd transfer it to an MP3 and then they'd send it back to me again. And, you know, I go, yeah, no worries, Steven. And, you know, we'd communicate a little bit like that around
That's
it.
Great.
So, yeah, it was an awesome experience. So, you know, the Wicked Cool have been a fantastic label. Really feel part of that sort of family, and have been there for a long time now and continue to be there.
Yeah. And so when you tour the U.S., or when you've toured the U.S. in the past, what places are you playing? Where and what cities are you hitting?
Look, we went over on first gig was on an Australian government grant that got us airfares over to Austin. So we've played South by Southwest
right on.
Three times, which has been a fantastic experience. Yeah. We've done some tours up the West Coast. So we've done San Diego and LA all the way up to California. We've played in Oregon as well. That was one of the first tours that we did. Had a great, really cool gig out on the Santa Monica Pier.
Oh, right, yeah.
With is it David Cassidy? One of the Cassidys. I think, you know, the Cassidys.
Sure.
Brothers, I think
is
David.
Is it David or it'll be Sean?
Maybe Sean. Sean. It was Sean. Yeah, so we supported his band out on the Santa Monica Pier, which was a great sort of funny little gig. Did all up the coast there, and then we've also done the transatlantic region. So we've been to Cleveland a few times.
Wow.
And played around Pennsylvania up to Boston.
Sure.
Obviously New York and New Jersey is probably about the most south we've sort of been, and and in that sort of loop too. So that sort of area, and also the West Coast three or four times. Yeah,
right on. That's fantastic. I mean, what's the financial barrier to entry to get to the U.S. or to Brazil or Spain?
Airfares are pretty expensive from WA. You know, to fly anywhere really, but I think after all these years, we've been able to really know how to tour pretty well, you know, without too much. I mean, generally the local promoters handle everything now.
Good.
The States, I suppose, is, it's fantastic too. You know, the audiences have been great, you know, very, very into it and very, very polite, very, very polite audiences in the States. The barrier to, I think, all of it is accommodation, right, and having to fork out that. So a day off from a gig means a day off where your bank balance goes down. So, you know, but the way we look at it, if we get to go overseas and we play some shows and, you know, we haven't forked too much money out or we've made a little bit, then we're happy. Merch is the way to go, as you know, these days. So if you're selling some merchandise, then you can pop up your tour funds. But we tend to make money on our Spanish tours, make money on our Brazilian tours. We did a huge one over there with Ganga Jang, Spy versus Spy, and Yothi India. It was Australian Surf Rock Festival, and we played to 30,000 people on the beach.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, which was incredible. There's some footage floating around of that. It's just out of control. So the Brazilians are really sort of passionate and full on. And so the money to do Brazil, which we've done twice, there's a lot more cash. But sometimes you've got to get some sponsorship and bits and pieces to actually do it. But once again, our album got bootlegged over there, Jimmy. So we're a story of bootlegged albums, which have allowed us to, you know, travel the world and, you know, and play rock and roll in many wonderful, wonderful places and met many wonderful, wonderful people, which is, you know, that's just magic.
And are you acting as the band's manager and agent, or do you have a manager?
No, Jeff, who is the bass player and long-term mate since we were kids, he's the band's manager because he's actually a promoter and a band manager.
Oh, okay.
So it makes sense for him to do that. My gig's to write the songs, sing the songs, and, you know, co-write with Adrian, the other guitarist who sings as well, and write songs and, do the gig. And my gig is to actually record and produce and master the tracks and do all the video clips. So I'm that sort of, that's me. That's my gig. I'll leave all the rest of it to him.
Are you recording it right there in your garage? Are you recording?
Yeah.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
It sounds fantastic. Everything. Like, I mean, you get a really great sound out of that place.
Yeah. Cheers, mate. Yeah. Look, it's it's got a concrete roof, right? Which you know, I used to think, oh, the sound quality in here is not going to be that great, but it actually adds to the sort of, you know, that sort of 60s sort of vibe. There's, you know, I try to do as much as I possibly can about limiting noise, but a lot of the time, you know, having spill is a good thing because you're listening to live stuff. Spill is a great thing instead of having to take it all out of the mix. So, yeah, and just over the years, I've just learned how to. I use Pro Tools, but we try to do as much as we possibly can analog. You know, it's very easy to do a bit of a cheat these days with all the digital gear that's out there. But look, there's nothing like you know, plugging a SM57 in front of a Vox and spending a couple of hours, you know, dialing in a sound and, you know what I mean?
Sure. And
most of it's done here, mate. And, I've been starting to get into a little bit of mastering as well, but it's a real specialist sort of area, but I'm getting better. I master all our stuff and I think it sounds not too bad.
Oh, fantastic. Sounds fantastic. Yeah. So do you have a mixing board right there that you're using?
I use Pro Tools on a laptop. Yeah, so I don't use an old analog desk. So I'll transfer the analog sort of signals into Pro Tools. I've always sort of used Pro Tools. I used to have an old desk, but then it started getting crackly and, you know, the upkeep was pretty full on. But I've got old preamps, so Focusrite, preamp mic, you know, those sort of the old green ones, bits and pieces of I use a Sapphire module as a door digital interface, old Rhodes mics and old Shaw classic vintage mics, got a lot of sort of mics, and I just run it through just those a KRK studio monitors of all different sort of sizes. So I'll just show you, I've got sort of like those I've got eights and fours, plus I've also got some old some really good sort of little Sony sort of speakers that I sort of test mix on different formats. And you know, a number of different kits. You know, some Dave's got a couple of cool old vintage Gretsch kits and Yamaha kits and we plug and play and try what sounds sort of best for us and that's the joy of it all, really, just getting in the room because we rehearse here, so it's really easy to come in and just, hey man, we got a new riff and let's have a go, and,
yeah yeah
And I'll go, just hold on one tick, and I'll just set up a couple of room mics, and we'll capture the essences of something.
Yes,
which
exactly.
And then I'll work on it a little bit later on, and then we'll come and lay down some parts or record the beds completely live, and then I'll overdub the vocals and a little bit sort of later on.
Yeah, and how many gigs are you guys doing in a year, roughly?
Oh, look, over the years, I think we've done over 1,500 shows in our lifetime.
Okay, wow.
A lot of playing. But I think, the Chevelles probably only play a dozen times a year if not on tour.
Okay.
So if that, right? We've had a little bit of a hiatus between this 35th anniversary sort of tour and our last tour. Mm-hmm. There's just some health stuff and bits and pieces which required the family to sort of reorientate towards, us to reorientate towards our families for a little while. But generally, we'll do maybe in Perth, maybe only about 6 gigs a year.
Okay.
We're trying to get over to the East Coast when we get back from Spain this time.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes we play more overseas than we do in our hometown.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So the Surf Side Project, how many gigs are you doing with them?
We'll probably do, maybe over a dozen with them as well. So I'll probably play, anywhere between sort of maybe a dozen to 2 dozen gigs a year.
Okay. All right.
So it's not, I love playing, right?
Yeah.
I really love playing. As you do, and it's just like I really miss it. I love going to the studio and recording, but I love getting out there and turning up and getting into it. It's a real release from all the psych work that I do as well. It's a really good juxtaposition to that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This controlled environment where you're doing things very clinically to letting out the inner beast.
Do you ever get an acoustic guitar and play at the local pub or anything like that?
I've got a gig on one of our big radio stations next week as a promo sort of gig. So I'll be recording a couple of acoustic tracks. Yeah, I do. I had an interview with a journalist over here about 3 months ago, and I just played sort of solo. Adrian got up with me and we played a few surf tunes as well. But I got a couple of Maiten acoustic guitars.
Yes, of course.
Australian ones. Yeah, and I love it. They're always sort of sitting around. This is my sort of man cave, so the guitars are always sort of sitting around and up in the house as well. So I'm always picking them up and playing. I love strumming.
Yeah, yeah. And your collection of electric guitars, is it a huge one or is it?
No, look, I've probably, I can go through if you want. So I've got a 1971 Fender Custom with the Bigsby Bridge. Yeah. 1970, sorry. 1970. That is out to pasture because it needs a frets work done on it.
Yeah.
Right. But that's my first great guitar that I, really decent guitar I bought.
Sure.
Then I've got the Gibson Firebird.
Uh-huh.
And I've got I think it's a 54 reissue Tele.
Okay. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yep. So USA made one, which is my stable one for a while. Got the Riviera.
Yeah.
I actually really like the neck on this. Uh-huh. I've been really enjoying playing it, and I recorded with it. I like the tones that I get out of it. So I'm probably going to take that one on tour as my prime guitar.
Right on.
That's the Paul two little.
I remember.
So I love that guitar. I really love that guitar. It's so hot with the pickups. It's So what's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in my which is in a case, my Strat. So 7?
Yeah.
7 guitars?
That's decent.
Yeah.
And a couple of
I had a Gibson 335 and I bloody sold it.
Oh, did you really?
Years ago to buy an amplifier, which I hated.
Uh-huh.
And I traded it in for $900 and it was a beautiful Sunburst 335 that I wish I would have kept because it'd be worth some great money now. And I don't know why I sold it.
Well, just, you know, we
you know
all
those
have
things. Them. Sometimes you get into gear. You have those moments, don't you?
Yeah. So apart from music, apart from your job, what do you do for fun? What do you do to relax?
Look, I think music's my relaxing. Okay. I come into the garage. Look, I'm a bit. Bit of ADHD like most musos are. I've got quite a few side projects and bits and pieces that I do. Uh-huh. You know, I've got a I'll show you this too. I've actually got a custom motorcycle label.
Oh wow.
So, I've got a garage out here which is very dirty at the present point in time.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of custom bikes, so I've got a label called 66 Motorcycles. You could probably look up online, which does custom motorbikes that now has only just turned into a clothing label. But we used to do about 100 builds a year, so I'm into vintage motorcycles, mate. So that's my passion as well. So
right,
and vintage motocross bikes. So I've got a couple of old CB750s, CB350s. That was a GS1100 that I'm turning into a cafe racer.
Okay.
I've got CR125 and CR250 Elsinores, and you know I've got XR75s. And
right on.
I've got about 15 bikes. I used to have about 40 motorcycles.
Wow.
And I've been culling them. So motorcycles and guitars, they fit really well. And surfboards, right?
Yeah.
Old Mels.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of old Malibus that I still surf, and I've gone back to a shortboard again. So I've got quite a few boards. And
right
I just
on.
Bought some land over in Bali. So it's like a semi-retirement place at near a break called Balian, which is in the north of Bali, and they call it old man's Chopu.
Oh wow!
Right, it's this big left and right hander,
but
it's very very you know, it's not as steep as Chopu, obviously, yeah. For the old blocks. I'm building a bit of a Balinese sort of style house.
Oh, right.
Over there to semi-retire. At some sort of point from psychology, not from music.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's only 100 meters walk to the beach. So
oh my gosh!
Like, yeah. So that's what I do to relax. I surf.
Yeah.
And there's some small waves at my local break, which is only about 200 meters away.
Yeah.
From my house. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, just that's what I do.
Yeah. Is land fairly cheap in Bali?
It is. Yeah. I think our whole. Our whole land, the best thing is not to buy, which is, it's hard from our Western societies to understand that, but they leasehold.
Okay.
And it's the most sort of stable legal thing. So we've leasehold for 30 years and I've built a three-bedroom, three-bathroom with a pool on a 250-square-meter block. And it's only really cost me about 250 or 220 Australian dollars, which is what about, I think with the Australian dollar at the moment, so probably only about 130,000 American dollars.
Wow. Yeah, that's
it's
crazy.
Cheap, man. Yeah. It's
and I mean, how do you go about getting a contractor and stuff to do, to build and how?
Well, it's hard. You can fall into big holes over there. But luckily, one of my really good mates, because I've been going to Bali since the 80s, is a really good friend. And his family is sort of tied up with the royal family. And
so we've
got some good people that can be really trustworthy in building it and all the land and the notaries and how you go and leasehold and the whole lot. So we're pretty lucky that that's happening. So, that's the next project. And maybe even a studio over there. Jimmy, I'd love to have a studio over in Bali.
Yeah.
Come over and record some stuff, mate.
Anytime.
Have a holiday at the same time.
You know, I was already thinking that, so. And then you mentioned a clothing label. You have a clothing label as well?
Yeah, so the 66 Motorcycles is the clothing label. So it's basically just T-shirts and hats and leather bags and bits and pieces, satchels and, you know, a bit of that sort of stuff. So that just ticks over. We don't do the custom bike building much anymore. There's not a lot of money in it, and it's a lot of work. So, we went from like a 1,000-square-meter garage and where we were turning over 100 builds and restorations, triumphs, a really old sort of British bikes as well, and it just become too much.
Yeah.
And So I basically sold the garage off to someone else. The two mechanics, and they're still got that called Retro Moto down in Fremantle, and I just run the label from home. Really, it's just, you know, people order off the website, and you know, and I you know, send everywhere in the world, really. Send a lot of merch over to Northern Europe, Scandi countries, and the States as well. Actually, send merch to the States as well.
Right on.
Yeah, so that keeps me busy.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time. I know it's really early for you. You had to get up super early to do this, and I appreciate it.
No worries, man. No, mate, I really appreciate it, and it's really great to you know, to meet you in person. And
likewise.
Where are you, Jimmy? Where
I'm
are you?
About an hour north of San Francisco, so I'm in Napa, California.
Oh, yeah, great. Great part of the world.
Yeah, it's okay.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, look, I'm hopefully to, you know, we're hoping to get over to the States again, probably mid next year. We're thinking. We're trying to sort of get over there. We might even do a south by southwest. But if I'm ever up in your region, mate, I'd you know, because we do get up to you know, up to the top there.
We'll have to do something together.
Yeah, for sure, mate. Yeah. So no, I really appreciate your time, and it's been great chatting to you.
No, the pleasure's all mine. I'm a fan. I became a fan.
Right, man.
Yeah, I love every. Right. I mean, there's, yeah, I have a lot of songs to go back through.
yeah, there's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, you guys got a lot of albums, and they're all great. I mean, everything I heard, I loved. So there you go.
Oh, cheers, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thanks, man.
Yeah,
no worries.
Well, have a great afternoon, or actually, have a great morning.
Yeah.
And I'll see you later. Hopefully, I'll see you, you know, in person here pretty soon.
Yeah, man, I'd really like to catch up and have a beer with you. No worries.
Likewise. Okay. Thank you, Dwayne.
Cheers, Jimmy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.